out there. All kinds of stories that people choose to live by. Stories that give our lives meaning and stories that give our lives definition. Stories that shape us. Stories about the American dream, or maybe stories about Southern pride, or stories about sports success, or stories about achieving that lifelong goal. Stories about romantic notions of happily ever after. There are all kinds of stories out there that give definition and meaning to our lives, that shape our lives. We believe that there is one story that is greater than all of those other stories, and it is the story of the God who has made himself known to us in Jesus Christ. And this great big story moves from anticipation of his birth to the birth to his life, throughout his life, and then on to his death, and then his resurrection and beyond. This is one big story. And every year, throughout the year, we make our way through this story. And Advent is the first chapter of the story. This story will go on for a few months, and then it's gonna culminate with Easter Sunday, with resurrection, and then on to Pentecost from there. And so we as a church, we follow this calendar, not in a dry ritualistic way, but we follow this calendar because this calendar really does trace the story of the life of Jesus, because we believe that this story matters more than every other story that is out there. That this story takes precedence over every other story out there. And so as we trace this story year after year after year after year, it becomes one more way that God gets hold of us to shape us, to change us, so that we can become more like the Jesus of the story. Not long ago, someone who wasn't really coming to the church said to me, "Pastor, help me understand this Christian calendar stuff and the seasons and all that." And I did my best to explain it, and I did. And then I said to the person, I said, "But you know, really the best way to really get it is to jump in. It's to come and to be a part, to enter into the seasons, to participate in the worship of the services of the seasons. That's better than any explanation that I can give you." And so here we are. On this first Sunday of the season of Advent, we are jumping in. We are entering into a brand new rhythm of this whole calendar. This story of Jesus, this story, it is a story about a revolution. We're talking about a revolution. For as long as there have been people, for as long as there have been civilizations, for as long as there have been governments, there have been revolutions. Now, we don't live in a place and a time where we feel a lot of revolutions, political types of revolutions around us right now. The revolution that we probably most relate to is the American Revolution of our history. The word revolution comes from the Latin, and it means turnaround. A revolution is a turnaround. And so basically the premise is this. When a group of people has had enough, there comes a turnaround in power. There comes an overthrowing, a revolt against the way things are, a change in who is in charge. That's what a revolution is. This story that we have, this story that we enter into today, it is a story about a revolution. It may seem to be a sweet story about a young virgin and a baby. On the surface, it may seem to be a sweet, sentimental story about a young virgin and a baby, but no, it is so much more than that. This story is a story about a revolution. God is turning the tide against sin and death. He is overthrowing the powers of evil and darkness. This story is a story about a God who has had enough of the way things are, and now it is time for him to do something about it. Evil has had its way for too long. Darkness has had its way for too long. Sin has had its way for too long. Those powers have run amok for too long. And so now God has had enough, and now God is ready to do something about it. Enough evil, enough brokenness, enough suffering, enough sin, enough. So in this story, God orchestrates a turnaround. And he does it not with military muscle. He does it not with violent force. He does it not with a powerful leader. But instead, he brings this revolution really in the most beautiful way, in the most unsuspecting way, with a young teenage virgin girl and a baby. Folks, you can't make this stuff up. Would you stand with me as we hear these words together? Luke chapter 1, verse 26. In the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary. The angel went to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored, the Lord is with you." Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. But the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, you have found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you're to call him Jesus, and he'll be great, and he'll be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and his kingdom will never end." Church, this is the word of the Lord. Amen. You may be seated. 6 months after God opens a womb for an elderly, childless couple, God finds a young teenage girl in a place that is so remote that Luke has to clarify where it is. He says that it's Nazareth, a town in Galilee. That's like saying to somebody somewhere else, "I'm from Waverly." It's a town in Tennessee. This is a place so remote, so rural, so out of the way, so unknown that he has to clarify. It's Nazareth. It's a place in Galilee. Mary was a handmaiden, which meant that she was a lower peasant class person. She was not from prominence. She did not have an important last name. She had no wealth or status to speak of. And the angel, the story tells us, comes to her and says, "You are favored." And twice the angel uses this word, favor, toward Mary. Folks, this is probably the first time in this young girl's life that anyone has ever referred to her as favored. I doubt anyone would have referred to her as favored before this point. In sports, to be favored is to be expected to win. No one in that day would have looked at this young girl and said, "She is expected to win." She is not from a place that was favored. She is not part of a gender that was favored in that day, and she was not part of a social class that was favored. Nothing about this young girl was favored, and yet the angel pronounces God's favor upon her. The angel says, "You're going to conceive and give birth to a son," and so there she was, frozen in fear and confusion. Folks, this story, We run into the problem of being over familiar with this story, most of us, right? We're so familiar with it, this is one of those stories that we already know what it says, so we don't really hear it. And the challenge for us is to hear it again. This story has been so scrubbed and sanitized and sentimentalized over the years. The truth is, this really is a scandalous story. It's a scandalous story, and for this young girl, this news was terror. It was terror for her. When Luke says that she was greatly troubled at his words and that she wondered. The Greek says that she took an audit of his words. She tried to add them up. She tried to make sense and figure these words out. Folks, if I'm her, I'm asking the question, okay, angel, which part of me now is favored? Which part of my story is favored? Which part of this news that you're telling me makes me favored? Is it the fact that I'm going to live with a teenage unwed pregnancy in first century Palestine? Does that make me favored? Is it the fact that my fiance now has a legal right to divorce me if he wants to do that? Does that make me favored? Does the fact that now I'm going to be shunned and ridiculed and gossiped about by everybody, does that make me favored? The fact that people are going to, from this point forward, for the rest of my life, talk about me like I'm damaged goods, does that make me favored? The fact that I can be charged with adultery now, because if Joseph wants to, he can charge me with adultery. And the penalty for adultery is to be stoned to death. And so I'm looking at, worst case scenario, a death sentence. Does that make me favored? The fact that I'm probably going to be shipped off to live with some faraway relatives for a few months, like many young unwed mothers throughout history, does that make me favored? Which part of this story makes me favored? Folks, a lot of the time when churches put on Christmas pageants, all the little girls jockey for and want to be the part of Mary. Everybody wants to be Mary. Can I tell you that in this story, Mary probably did not want to be Mary? She probably did not want to be Mary. Now, we can make this story too much about Mary if we're not careful. We have a tendency to make this story too much about Mary, to make Mary the focus of the story. Just like in our own lives, we have a tendency to make the stories too much about us, right? We have a tendency to make the story too much about Mary. This story is not ultimately about Mary. This story is about God. This story is about the God who finds an unlikely partner in an out-of-the-way place. This story is about a God who favors someone who is so unfavored. This story is about a God whose heart constantly beats for people who are pushed aside. This is a story about a God who has had enough of the way things are, and now he's ready to bring change and do something about it. This is a story about a God who is launching a revolution against sin and darkness and death, and he's doing it, of all places, inside of the womb of a young teenage girl. This is a story about that kind of God. Folks, the word favor in the Greek, the root word is the same word as the word for grace. It's the same word. In other words, when the angel comes to her, he says to her twice, "You are graced by God. You are graced." God has no reason to choose Mary. And yet God chooses Mary anyway, and that is exactly what grace is. It doesn't matter what the rest of the world tells Mary she is. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what other social classes tell her she is. It doesn't matter what the town gossip is going to say about what she is. It doesn't matter what the religious leaders are going to say about what she is. It doesn't matter what other young girls are going to say about what she is. It doesn't matter what everybody else says she is. God says she is favored, so she is favored. And folks, in this story, when you look closely at the angel's words, what the angel's saying to her, the angel isn't giving her instructions.
Notice very carefully, the angel doesn't come to her and say, okay, now you need to do this, and you need to do this, and you need to do this, and here are your instructions for going forward, and here's the advice. That's not what the angel does. That's not the angel's role. The angel doesn't come to give advice. The angel comes to give news. Okay? Here's the difference. Advice is this. Mary, here's what you need to do. That would be advice. News is this. Mary, here is what God has done. Right? This isn't advice for something that Mary should do. This is news that is pronounced upon her, that is declared to her of what God has done. Folks, this is all about what God has done, what God is doing, what God will do in this young lady because she is favored by the God of the universe, and she now, of all people, has a role to play in God's salvation history, bringing about God's revolution, turning the tide against sin and death. And that is the good news. Folks, the main focus of this angel's message is not Mary. The main focus of this angel's message is not a pregnancy. The main focus of this angel's message is not a birth. The main focus of the message is right there in verse 33. The main focus of this message is the kingdom that will never end. This kingdom that is God's beautiful revolution. That is what God is up to. For Mary, to be favored means to be drafted. That's exactly what happened to her. She was drafted into this work, right? She was drafted into the revolution. She's been drafted into God's kingdom because she now has a role to play, to be this agent of God's work in his kingdom, to be an instrument of God's grace from this point forward, to be a servant in his kingdom, to be a partner in his mission. She has now been drafted into this work. And so this means that she now has work to do. This means that it won't be easy. She's going to have a hard road, and you continue to follow the story through the Gospels and see the pain and the agony that Mary goes through as a mother. She has a role to play. She has work to do. It will not be easy, but it will be good because it will be God's plan. And as the angel says to her, God's going to be with you. He will be with you. Folks, I want you to know this morning, you can never, ever, ever, ever say, God would not want me. You can't say that. You can't say, God wouldn't want somebody like me. He wouldn't favor someone like me. He wouldn't want somebody like me to be a part of his work. You can't say that about this God, because this is the kind of God who comes to the most unlikely people, people like Mary, people like you, and people like me, and he drafts us into his kingdom because of his grace. When God says you're favored, it doesn't matter what anybody else says about you. Doesn't matter what your boss says. Doesn't matter what that family member says. Doesn't matter what the town gossip says. Doesn't matter what your coworker says. Doesn't matter what your neighbor says. When God says you're favored, you're favored. And that is all that matters. This God is a God who favors like people like Mary and you and me. He favors us right into his kingdom. He drafts us into his revolution. And so we go as part of his work in this world. We go into every relationship. We go into every interaction. We go into every business transaction. We go into every Christmas party. We go into every office meeting. We go into every family gathering. We go as agents of God's revolution. We go bearing his love and being his change and doing his work. We go declaring God's good news. And that is what it means for us to be a part of God's beautiful revolution. Church, I'm going to ask you to stand with me this morning. And this morning, we're going to have a little bit of a different kind of response. As Katie plays, you're going to bear with me this morning because I just had a stroke. I'm going to get a lot of mileage out of this. We're going to do something different this morning. Maybe you think you're the kind of person who God would never favor. You are wrong. God favors you, not because of who you are, but because of who he is. That's the kind of God this is. Being favored means being drafted into his kingdom, into his beautiful revolution. And we have work to do. We have a role to play. I'm going to ask Pastor Annetta and Pastor Janice if they'd come and stand at the front of these aisles. And this morning, here's the response that I'm going to call you to. I'm going to invite you to come down and to come in front of either Pastor Janice or Pastor Annetta. And as you approach them, I'm going to ask them to speak these very personal words over you, the personal words that the angel spoke over Mary. Greetings, you who are highly favored. God is with you. You might think, I don't need to hear that. Can I tell you, yes, you do. Yes, you do need to hear that. And I think you need to hear that personally. So this morning, as Katie plays, and as we move in a spirit of prayer, I'm just going to ask you, would you come down the aisles? And it'll just take a brief moment for you to stand in front of one of your pastors and have these words.